Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, April 4th, 2018. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. WSU professor who studies race relations in the U.S. discusses Confederate monuments and their impacts. Trump tariffs likely to impact Washington and Oregon cherry and apple markets in China. And study finds renewable energy and conservation may remove the need for lower Snake River dams. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. A study by the Northwest Energy Coalition shows a combination of renewable energy sources, conservation, and better energy management could eliminate the need for the four lower Snake River dams without significantly increasing costs or emissions. The Northwest Energy Coalition says the study can be used when federal officials move forward with their court-ordered analysis of how the dams operate and how to best recover wild salmon and steelhead populations. Currently, the federal government classifies many runs of wild Snake River salmon and steelhead under the Endangered Species Act. Some are endangered and some are threatened. Northwest Energy Coalition Executive Director Nancy Hirsch said the study shatters the myth that replacing the lower Snake River dams and restoring our wild salmon would compromise the reliability of our power system and cause major increases in rates and greenhouse gas emissions. Bonneville Power Administration and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers say dam removal would be too costly and would reduce electricity production. The Bonneville Power Administration issued their own report saying wind and solar power are unreliable and the dams keep the region's transmission lines operating reliably and efficiently. Energy Strategies Technical Transmission and Marketing Director Keegan Moyer said his group's analysis shows a combination of wind, solar generation, conservation, and storage could replace the power generated by the four lower Snake River dams within 10 years. The analysis also said there would be no need to construct new natural gas plants and renewable energy would be just as reliable as the dams. Market analysts say President Donald Trump's new tariffs could hurt the Pacific Northwest's $3 billion combined apple and cherry market in China. China was the top importer of Northwest-grown cherries last year, and the tariffs may halt future growth of Washington's apple and cherry industries. Belrose Incorporated President Desmond O'Rourke of Pullman said he tracked Washington tree fruit exporting trends and told the Yakima Herald China's response, creating their own tariffs, is a technique the country has used in the past that has adversely affected other U.S. industries. Last year, Washington and Oregon workers packed about 2.9 million 20-pound boxes of cherries heading to China with a total value of $127 million. Last year, China imported about 1.8 million 40-pound boxes of apples with a total value of $45 million, making China the fifth largest importer of apples. Northwest Cherry Growers International Program Director Keith Hu told the Herald the tariffs will likely make cherry prices in China even higher than the current $7 to $10 a pound. The tariffs could potentially slow or stop efforts from the Washington apple industry to export more to China. China does not have many options for cherries, although some lesser quality cherries come from Turkey. But if the tariffs go through, China has several other exporting countries they can get apples from. Cherry and apple farmers are hoping the U.S. government will figure out the tariffs within the 2 months before the harvest begins. Police today identified the man who drowned in the Spring Valley Reservoir near Troy as 68-year-old Stanley Kemble of Deary. Kemble's wife had reported him missing Monday at 8:30 p.m., telling deputies her husband had gone fishing. The deputies discovered Kemble's car by the boat ramp at 9:45 p.m. and found his boat 100 yards from the dock, overturned and submerged. Deputies then contacted the Troy Fire Department, who found Kemble floating under the water at 11:30 p.m. Crews transported Kemble to Gritman Medical Center, where he was pronounced dead. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. A Palouse chapter of Food Not Bombs is forming and will hold its first meeting tonight at Mikey's Heroes in Moscow. Food Not Bombs has existed as a movement in the U.S. and many foreign countries for 30 years. Their tactic of feeding the hungry in public areas such as city parks has inspired numerous city governments around the U.S. to enact laws prohibiting free public feedings, leading to the arrest and prosecution of organizers, confiscation of food, and confrontations. A handbill for the Moscow meeting says the following: Food Not Bombs of the Palouse will hold their first meeting Wednesday, April 4th at 6 p.m. at Mikey's Heroes, 527 South Main in Moscow. Food Not Bombs of the Palouse recovers food that would have been discarded and shares it as a way of protesting war and poverty, with 50 cents of every tax dollar going to the military and 40% of our food being discarded while so many people were struggling to feed their families, that we could inspire the public to press for military spending to be redirected to human needs. We also reduce food waste and meet the direct need of our community by collecting discarded food, preparing vegan and vegetarian meals that we share with the hungry, while providing literature about the need to change our society. Food Not Bombs also provides food to protesters and striking workers and organizes food relief after natural and political crises. That from a handbill publicizing the first meeting of Food Not Bombs of the Palouse, scheduled for tonight at 6 p.m. at Mikey's Heroes in Moscow. The Facebook page for the group has an agenda for the meeting that states the group is informal and people can ask questions at any time. The page also announces two local businesses, Nectar Restaurant and Wine Bar, and The Kitchen Counter, have partnered with Food Not Bombs of the Palouse to provide excess food. A Washington State University history professor speaking to the Moscow League of Women Voters today made the argument the preservation and display of Confederate monuments and flags are closely linked with race relations in the U.S. Speaking on the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr., Professor Cliff Stratton said Confederate monument building corresponded with a period of withdrawal of black civil rights, mostly in the U.S. South. Stratton said things such as the Mississippi state flag and a monument to General Robert E. Lee are tied in with what some historians call the myth of the lost cause.
I'll quote probably the most famous historian of the American South, C. Van Woodward, who in 1951 defined the lost cause as a, quote, cult of archaism, a nostalgic vision of the past. Okay, that's broad, but more specifically, it's a description of a way of thinking that harkens back to an imagined glorious past before the so-called War of Northern Aggression, right? It's a way of framing and remembering the history of the American South and the Civil War that elevates noble defeat in battle, celebrates a way of life rooted in an agrarian economy, and downplays or erases the brutality of slavery, thus deflecting any charges of racism at those that subscribe to it. Okay. Now, this is most often espoused. I was trying to think, well, what's the most sort of common representation of this? I'd say it's the catchphrase, heritage, not hate, right? Which is a kind of innocuous phrase which we hear as a justification for continued displays, largely of the Confederate flag, but other kinds of Confederate symbols as well. We see it in films like Gone with the Wind, which kind of celebrate this agrarian past, and in television shows like The Dukes of Hazzard, right, which were quite popular. One of the stars of that show, Ben Jones, entered Georgia politics with the goal of preserving Georgia's Confederate heritage.
That was Washington State University history professor Cliff Stratton speaking at the Moscow League of Women Voters today at the 1912 building. Stratton showed a video of the 4th of July laser show at the state-owned gigantic Confederate monument of Stone Mountain in Georgia, in which Confederate leaders riding on horses come to life through giant animation projected on the mountainside, while the sound system plays Elvis Presley's rendition of Disney to cheering crowds. Stratton said literature about the state park downplays the fact that Stone Mountain was an early Ku Klux Klan meeting point in Georgia.
If you go to the Stone Mountain Park's website, it does not mention, if we could go ahead one more, and that is that Stone Mountain was one of the active or places in which the Ku Klux Klan was quite active throughout the 20th century. First organized a rally in 1915 under its second imperial wizard, W.J. Simmons. He was from Atlanta. They would continue to hold rallies there throughout the 30s and 40s. I think that maybe the last one was 1946 or 48, at least kind of officially sanctioned. So this is a postcard sort of depicting, you know, and celebrating the reemergence of the Klan in 1915. The Klan would go on in the 1920s to become a truly kind of national organization, not one confined to the South. So Stone Mountain, the carving on Stone Mountain is really likely the most permanent monument to the Confederacy. I mean, they could, I guess, blast it off the face of the mountain, but I don't see the political will in Georgia doing that anytime soon. Should also note that the town of Stone Mountain, which is a suburb of Atlanta, as of the 2010 census, was 75% African American. So this is a, you know, Confederate monument, a very prominent one, right in the heart of a predominantly black city.
That was WSU history professor Cliff Stratton. Stratton showed a map which indicated there are two Confederate monuments or Confederate-named public projects in Idaho, one in Washington and two in Montana. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. The Palouse Ice Rink in Moscow is currently $3.5 million short of their $5 million fundraising goal to build a new ice rink by November 2019. The current ice rink is over 17 years old, and those who use it say it is too small for local teams and other skaters. The city of Moscow has given the rink $1 million to help get closer to the rink's fundraising goal. Palouse Ice Rink Board Vice President Tony Mangini told the Daily News, "All we can do is keep plugging away and keep trying to reach our goal." The future of two buildings across Main Street from the new Evolve on Main apartment complex in downtown Pullman are up in the air. One of the buildings housed the long-closed Mimosa Bar and Grill, and the other building held a Subway sandwich shop and a Baskin and Robbins ice cream outlet. Pullman Mayor Glenn Johnson said the city cannot condemn the old Mimosa Bar and Grill building because the building is still intact. Subway franchise owner Cam Brinkman told the Daily News he plans to reopen soon after they remodel the building after a fire heavily damaged it last year. Brinkman said, "I think it'll be a lot of extra traffic downtown that they desperately need. It seems like the kids don't leave campus at all. It'll be a nice fresh change for the downtown area." The Baskin and Robbins closed after the owner was convicted of sexual assault. Republican Lieutenant Governor candidate Bob Nonini of Coeur d'Alene has changed his mind on making abortion a capital offense. At the Christ Church podcast forum in Moscow over the weekend, Nonini said he was thinking the death penalty for abortions would cut down abortion rates. In a phone interview with the Associated Press, however, Nonini said, "I strongly support the overturning of Roe v. Wade. That would allow states like Idaho to criminalize abortion as a deterrent. However, it is my understanding that in the history of the United States, long before Roe was foisted upon this country, no woman has ever been prosecuted for undergoing abortion. That is, for practical reasons as well as for reasons of compassion. There are a total of 5 Republicans running against each other for Idaho Lieutenant Governor. One of them, Janice McGeachin of Idaho Falls, said, "No, I cannot support a woman facing the death penalty for having an abortion. What we should do is prevent that." Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow Pullman area, there's a 100% chance of rain tonight, with a low around 40. Tomorrow, 100% chance of rain, high 51. And 100% chance of rain Thursday night, low 39. 40% chance of rain on Friday, mostly cloudy, high 53. Currently at the Pullman-Moscow Regional Airport, 43 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscast you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events, and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. I'm Lee Robartis. Megan Johnson assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. Coming up next, Between the Lines, a weekly news magazine from Connecticut, actually, and Flashpoints, a daily news magazine from Pacifica Radio in California, coming up at 6:30. At 7:30, we'll have the musical show, What's the Frequency, Kenneth? And at 8:30, Grateful Dead Through the Decades, Roger Rowley's on with Opposites Attract, playing music for you 10 till midnight tonight. Have a good night. KRFP Moscow Pullman, Community Radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial. Now broadcasting at 1100 watts and online.
KRFP programming is made possible in part by KRFP members and Old Thing Antiques, specializing in lighting, cowboy boots, paper art, cookware, and cutlery. Open Wednesday through Sunday, 11 to 5:30. Old Thing is right next to KRFP at 114 East 3rd Street in Moscow and at 208-285-1258.
KRFP is also sponsored by
Tie-Dye Everything, with locally made tie-dyed items, incense, and other accessories. Tie-Dye Everything is located near 6th Street at 527 South Main Street in Moscow. For more information, you can find Tie-Dye Everything at tiedye-everything.com.